Episode 14 of the Star Trek Discovery Podcast. I'm Brian.
And I'm Ruthie.
And tonight we will be covering Season 1, Episode 11, which is titled The Wolf Inside. But before we get to that, we have some feedback from last week. So we're going to open hailing frequencies. All right. So our first bit of feedback is from a friend of the podcast, Kyle, who, if you didn't know, is a longtime friend of Ruthie and is my co-host for the Fear the Walking Dead episodes of the Walking Dead Talk Through. He said, "This episode was amazing. I haven't enjoyed a suspenseful, humorous, and complete shock snap in an episode of Trek in as far as I can remember. This was a 10 licking Captain Tilly's boots out of 10. What a way to come back after the break." All right, you want to read the next one?
Okay, we have Todd Schwartzberg, who says, "I'm just following up because I'm listening to the podcast episode now, but hearing Cochran's name, I wonder if he was around the Star Trek world before this, if the Zefram Cochran character, James Cromwell, from the First Contact movie might have been a nod to Ryder Cochran. Just curious."
And that would probably be incorrect, simply because the character Zefram Cochran actually predated the movie. He was first mentioned in the original series way back in, actually was a character in season 2, episode 9, which was Metamorphosis. As, you know, so that went back like 50 years ago. So I don't think so. And it is a different spelling, but that's besides the point.
I'm pretty sure they talked about him in The Next Generation as well.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Before that movie, I should say.
Yeah, I agree. Next is from Chris. He says, "Regarding the mirror universe in DS9, it's explained that after the events in the TOS episode Mirror Mirror, where Kirk tries to convince Mirror Spock that he can change how things are done in the Terran Empire, Spock actually becomes Emperor and tries to implement reforms. However, it doesn't go well, and the Terran Empire is taken over by a Klingon-Cardassian alliance." Yeah, and that has to do with me being foggy last week about the DS9 mirror episodes, and that prompted me while I was basically sick right after the podcast all of last week, and I spent that time watching Deep Space Nine. So
I think we both were. I mean, I couldn't remember exactly what happened. I just knew that what's her face was,
yeah,
in charge of something. I think I said she was in charge of the rebels, but she obviously wasn't.
Yeah. Yeah. So the Empire was basically, you know, like said here, you know, taken over, and the Terrans were made slaves. And that's why you have like, you see a lot of human slaves in that. But, you know, the one weird thing about this was Spock in TOS, because, you know, clearly Spock is half Vulcan. And here in this episode that we just watched, we saw his father be, you know, a critical guy in the rebel leadership. So what does that mean exactly? Does that mean that I guess he's probably estranged from his father in the mirror universe too?
Maybe.
Right? Yeah. So It's interesting to note, but yeah, I watched a ton of Deep Space Nine episodes since I last podcasted. I'm up to season 3 now. So, one good thing you can do when you're sick, although yeah. Gosh, I was pretty sick. I got the flu and it was bad.
That's no good.
Yeah. So, our Twitter friend, Ken from Chicago, he said quite a few things, but there was one thing that I had to point out, and that was he mentioned awesome sauce, which is what we call on the Walking Dead talk through our yeses. So I'll just play that, of course.
Awesome sauce!
You may notice the vocal stylings of Ruthie there. Anyway,
with a little reverb fade.
A little reverb fade, yes. So he said, hashtag awesome sauce, hashtag Mirror Universe uniforms. He put in bracket new Mirror Universe uniforms. Hashtag Captain Killy. Yes, I would agree with that. Lorca's Scottish brogue. Burnham's quote-unquote disciplining number one in the lift, followed by applause. Yeah, the slow clap. The final agonizer booth reveal. And then he asks, so does Glenn under the dumpster equal Brian and Ruthie's Darmok and Jalad at Tanagra?
Oh, man. You just don't even know.
Glenn, under the dumpster.
At Tanagra.
When the walls fell.
Oh, gosh.
All right. If so
only.
So there were a few other things from last week that were just, you know, little minor things here and there, but those are the highlights. So, but this episode, actually, we mentioned The Wolf Inside was written by Lisa Randolph, who is a co-executive producer. And they mentioned on After Trek that she's involved. She was on loan from Jessica Jones. So, and was directed by TJ Scott. So it's time for shipwide announcement. And we will start with errata.
Incorrect.
We mentioned the Deep Space Nine confusion that I had, but one thing I did say that I thought was true, that isn't true, and that is there were no Voyager Mirror Universe episodes. So I went back and checked that, and yeah, they've been in TOS with one. The most were in Deep Space Nine.
Yeah.
And two in Enterprise. So.
Yeah.
And now two in Discovery.
I didn't think there were any Voyager Mirror Universe episodes, but I wasn't 100% sure. But I was kind of thinking to myself as I was running through them in my head, I don't know when they would have, it would have been Mirror Delta Universe, so that would have been kind of lame.
Yeah. All right. So one thing it's not about this episode. It's more a little bit of a mystery has been solved, other than the obvious mystery, but it's related. So I'll play this for that. The computer's going crazy. Shahzad Latif was a guest on After Trek this week. Big shock there. And he solved the mystery of the whole Javed Iqbal credit that was used on the episodes prior to this week's, you know, when we saw Vok. And that is that... The name comes from his father. It's basically his father's name who passed away 6 years ago. So the producers, you know, gave him an option of, you know, what name to use for that. And he used his father's name. So, which I think was kind of cool, but it just created the mystery. Conspiracy theories, including, or conspiracy theorists, I mean to say, including myself, went to town with that. Okay, so we have three pieces of news. Star Trek Discovery has been nominated for a Costume Designers Guild Award, which is a set of awards that I never heard of until I saw this news item. In the category of excellence in sci-fi fantasy television. And they are going up against Black Mirror with the USS Callister episode, ironically. Have you seen that yet?
No.
Okay. Game of Thrones, Once Upon a Time, and Sleepy Hollow. Hmm. So, not sure when that award ceremony is taking place, but good luck, I will say. Hmm. Second has to do with Brian Fuller, who was the original he's the co-creator, not the original co-creator, original showrunner of Star Trek Discovery. And of course, you know, he was on the Voyager staff prior to that. He has joined the creative team of Anne Rice's Vampire Chronicles TV series, which sounds like it's in development right now. And I don't think it's been carried to series yet or been picked up as series, but that's through Paramount Television, I believe. And he is in, according to the Paramount exec that I read an interview for, she is hoping that he's going to stay on as a showrunner, you know, once they're at that stage. So, you know, he was involved with American Gods, and just recently he and his co, you know, showrunner partner, they both left there recently. It sounds
They bounced from American Gods, and pretty much everybody else did too.
Yeah.
I was like, wow, this is going to be a 100% different show. I don't know what's going on with him. He just seems to be flitting from project to project I don't know. I have no idea what's going on, but I would say to whomever is hoping that he stays on as the showrunner, don't cross your fingers. Or keep your fingers crossed. Whatever. Keep your fingers crossed. That's what I'm trying to say. Because it seems like he's not really, I don't know. He's having commitment issues right now, I guess. So.
Well, it sounds like they had creative differences with Stars or something. I don't know, but.
I don't know either. But apparently Gillian Anderson was like, well, if Brian Fuller's out, I'm out. Same with Kristen Chenoweth. And who else? I can't remember. It seems like there was one, maybe two other people who also were leaving. And honestly, that show is it's weird. It's weird in a way that I'm not really sure I'm following the weirdness. Like, as for shows that premiered last year in the weird category, Legion was the right kind of weird. I mean, it was weird and I had no idea what was going on. But I was completely interested in what would happen next. Same with Falling Water. It was strange. I didn't really know what was going on, but I still wanted to watch and find out what was happening or what would happen the next week. American Gods, I was kind of just watching just because. So, I don't know. Strange.
That's kind of what I've heard about that show. That's a show that I never picked up. I was curious about it, but then I started hearing all this weird stuff. I'm like, that's another network I don't get. So don't know if I want to pick that up. So,
it's just, I don't know. It wasn't the good kind of weird. It was the kind of weird of like, are you sure you guys know what you're doing?
Yeah.
But having said that, Gillian Anderson was amazing. And Kristen Chenoweth was good too, except for they kind of made it seem like she would be a much bigger part of the show when she was really only in the last episode.
Hmm.
So it was kind of strange as far as that goes, but you know.
Yeah, that's based on a Neil Gaiman.
Yep, book.
Book.
Just one book, I guess. He didn't have a whole series or anything.
The next news item is business related, but it is fitting to this podcast. Shares in Viacom, Inc. and CBS Corp. were both up on Friday after a report in some trade paper, The Wrap, suggested that the two companies could be considering a merger. Now, why is this in here? Well, CBS owns the Star Trek TV series, and Viacom, which owns the Star Trek films, okay? And they were originally one company, or at least they, well, everything was owned by Viacom until they split off. Like, they took in CBS in 2000, I guess, and then they spun it off again and separated. And when they separated, CBS got the TV rights. So, and that was in 2006. So ever since then, there's been this, you know, weird, that's one of the big reasons for the, Kelvin timeline, because that way Paramount doesn't have to, stick to any of the, you know, stuff that happens in Next Generation or anything like that. So,
mm-hmm.
Anyway, that'll be interesting. I'm kind of hoping a little bit for that, because that will make things a little easier.
Maybe. I mean, they're kind of already set on a course now, so.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's not really that much. I mean, I don't really want them to suddenly backpedal and.
Yeah. I haven't heard anything new on that whole Tarantino Trek movie thing. I know that they had picked up a script writer, the guy that wrote The Revenant, I think, is supposedly writing a script, but that doesn't mean, you know, they in Hollywood, they write scripts all the time. That doesn't mean it's going to be a movie, and that doesn't mean Tarantino's going to direct it. But that would be a Viacom property, which they own Paramount Pictures. So anyway, okay, enough of that. Let's get into this interesting episode. So, what did you think of The Wolf Inside, Ruthie?
Well, I really liked this episode. I liked last week too, but this one, I don't know, I was just really taken with it. And I gave it a 9.75 Emperor Reveals.
Cool. And there was some confusion I noticed while I was editing, that originally I gave it a 9.7 last week. And then I said, I don't know why it's so low that it's a 9.75. It's like, well, no, it's a 9.7. But I guess I meant a 9.75 last week. Now, this week, I didn't like this episode as much. I still liked it. So we basically did a complete flip. Because you gave last week a 9 and you gave this week a 9.75. I give this one a 9 and I give it 9 fights with mirror selves.
Mm.
So, and you can guess what that's about. All right. And we got some ratings from our listeners. Why don't you start?
Okay, Mark DeCote gives it 5 out of 10.
And I never did write down what it was out of 10 of, but he did say something, but that'll be in the voicemail. Clint says, another great episode, but half a notch down from last week. He gave it 8 steamy baths out of 10.
Is it Stefan or Stefan? I don't know. Gives it 7 out of 10 for me.
Yeah. And he's a tough marker. So that's a decent mark for him. Rick says, I enjoyed this week's episode and rate it 9 out of 10 traitors beamed to space.
And Fred from the Netherlands says 9 nicely lit bathtubs out of 10.
Yes, and we should also mention that last week his rating was he had pretty assy hand jewels, but what he really meant was pretty bad assy hand jewels. So he clarified for after we recorded, but
I think he further clarified in the feedback this week, and I just wanted to point out that I certainly could not give feedback in a foreign language. So you're doing great.
Yes, you are definitely doing great. Okay, so we've got our yeses now.
Yes.
I love that. And Fred, as well as Mark in his voicemail, but Fred actually didn't give us voicemail this time. Fred gave us a document. So we're going to, instead of splitting it up, we're going to give it all at once in the document. And once we go over it, you'll see why. We also have pictures to share and everything, which I'll have to stick in the blog post somehow. I have to figure out how to do that. But that will be later. So, all right. So what you got for yes?
I loved Michael's opening monologue. A lot of the things that she talks about remind me of something that I think I was listening to. I think it was the Sandbox, the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. podcast. And they mentioned, it was either that one or it was another one that they do. But in any case, some podcast I was listening to recently, we're talking about that that old adage, the wolf you feed. And thinking of, like, having heard that recently, when I saw the title of this episode and then what was kind of going on, it reminded me of that. And I feel like her opening monologue was really sort of geared towards that, I guess.
Yeah.
I liked it a lot.
And so much of it actually applied to Tyler.
Mm-hmm.
The very things that she was saying actually applied to him as well. And, you know, we see that later. To that end, my, one of my yeses is, you know, we basically knew from last week that Tyler, was Vok, but it wasn't succinctly stated. But it went down in a way that I did not expect. And it was one of those things. It's like, I thought, am I going to see Mirror Vok? I thought I might see him, but I didn't think the reveal that Tyler is Vok would come out of it. And I certainly didn't expect him to fight himself. So I thought that was, I thought that was really cool. So I gave that a yes. Do you have anything else?
Not really. I had, I didn't really get to take really notes this time due to a little snafu on my part. So I'm kind of going based on one viewing from memory.
Well, that's cool.
Yeah. I mean, I guess I would say Tilly. I always enjoy Tilly.
I think Tilly deserves a showcase award. Just a short one. Yeah, I mean, she's been so awesome, and she was awesome technically this week as well. You know, kudos to her. My last yes, and I particularly like this. There's a little show that I watch called The Walking Dead. You might remember that one, Ruthie.
I recall. Yes, I recall.
Well. And I won't give this out or give any spoiler here, but in episode 5, this particular season, it had a 15-minute cold open. So, and I thought that was really cool when that show did it. And on this show, we've seen a couple of times where they've had no cold open at all. But this time we had a 14-plus minute cold open. Of course, that I think includes the, previously on. But still, it was, I looked at my player and it was like in the 14s when the title finally started playing. So that was a long one. It's like, gee, that's like almost, a third of the way in before they started actually playing the, theme song. So I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah, I'm a fan of long cold opens.
Yeah. All right. So it is now time for
No!
Which, of course, was from the episode Sarek, which I mentioned, of course, because, we see Sarek this episode. We got some from Mark.
I hope so. After that rating.
Yes. did you have any no's?
No, not that I could think of.
Do you mean to say?
No! Yep.
Okay. I thought it was a little bit of a stretch. The no cameras in sick bay, it seemed. Now, I guess maybe the power outage had something to do with that. Like maybe, I don't know, maybe they couldn't access them because the power was out. I guess that's how he got out of the, was able to get out of the force field, the power being out. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And I guess Tyler, as chief of security, even if they had cameras, he could have covered his tracks, but still, I thought it was kind of odd that they didn't know that, Stamets didn't kill Culber until, later.
Well, I think they probably, did what most cop shows do. They walk in on a situation and take it for granted that what looks like happened is what happened and kind of go from there. But, they obviously figured it out. So,
yeah.
Whether or not it was because Tyler was covering his tracks or because whatever electrical issues they were having screwed with stuff, which I didn't really know what that was about. I was like, why? What's going on here? What happened? Did I miss something? I don't know.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
it didn't really bother me.
Yeah. Mark talks about that in his voicemail too. He goes into more detail. So I will leave him to do that, but I kind of wondered about that whole thing myself. Anyway, next thing I brought up, it's funny that, these two, Terrans come in, or at least, they think they're Terrans. And it seemed like the Rebels had no guards around them, like just kind of were kind of nonchalant about things. I thought that was kind of weak, so to speak. And then the most glaring one was the whole thing about, like, okay, Sarek does a mind meld with Burnham, and I thought that was really cool. That could probably be a yes. And of course, he's like kind of dumbfounded because it seems clearly he did not raise Burnham in the mirror universe, which I'm wondering if we'll find out next week that Georgiou raised her.
Makes more sense because there's no way in that situation that a Vulcan would have raised a human who would have then gone back to the Terran Empire.
Yeah. I have a feeling that that's where it's going to go. And I have some theories about next week, which we'll get into in a little bit. But he did not mind well meld with Tyler, which the whole thing with Tyler was kind of strange. Like, Vok defeats him and, he could have killed him, but he doesn't, which I guess maybe that's the difference between Klingons and mirror universe. And it's almost like the Terrans and the Klingons switch places.
Yeah.
but, Sarek should have just mind melded with Tyler. Of course, that would have screwed things up later in the episode, but I don't know. I thought that was kind of odd. It seemed like an obvious thing to do, but they didn't do it. And you have a theory on that, I see.
Well, not really a theory on that, but I mean, I kind of feel like, well, he didn't really need to because she's the leader. So I don't know. I guess you would kind of assume that a leader would have people in check, but maybe not. I don't know. But I think the obvious reason why he didn't was because Tyler was wearing his plot device shield.
Yes. And I need a sound effect for shields up. I realize right now I need a shields up. I will get that for next week. I think you're right about that. And, you know, it clearly did, you know, come into play later on. So, all right. Well, that's it for our yeses and nos. So let's get into our regular feedback for this. So now it's time to open hailing frequencies again. All right. Well, we have another king size voicemail from Mark. So here we go.
Hey, Ruthie. Hey, Brian. Mark from Ontario, Canada here. This is my feedback for The Wolf Inside. And I give this episode 5 out of 10 broken tethers. And that's being a little bit generous as is. You know, for the first time this season, I really didn't want to watch the episode a second time, and I actually wasn't in the mood to send feedback in, but I have committed, so here goes. What was with that ominous starting with the electrical malfunction and all that? That entire scene was just so they could find Stamos and the doctor? They could have just as easily had somebody walk into medical and find them like that. It was really disappointing to find out that this whole electrical malfunction thing didn't pay off or didn't come back later in the episode. There was really no point to it. At least Stamos' stuttering of forest and it's dark and I could see him through the trees, it all makes sense once you see the end of the episode, because that's what he was envisioning. Speaking of Stamos, I found that whole storyline to be really boring. Yes, Tilly had some interesting insight into the whole Spore universe and that, and I know they were trying to create some sort of drama, but I knew that he wasn't going to die. So to me, that whole storyline was just a waste of time. And to find out at the end that there's another Paul Stamos from the Mirror Universe, and obviously he's part of a Spore Drive experiment as well, that just makes me think about this whole Mirror Universe. I don't understand how a universe that diverged, I don't know when this Terran Empire started, but how can a universe that diverged so long ago have so many parallels with ours? I mean, I know it's fun to see the different characters in different positions, but it just doesn't make sense on a theoretical point of view. The Mirror Universe should be completely different from ours and have no parallels to it. Now, I mentioned how I didn't really enjoy the whole Stamos side of the story. Well, I can say that the whole Michael monologue at the beginning was also boring. Actually, the most interesting thing about that whole monologue was when Saru showed up to give her morning rituals or whatever. And I don't understand Michael's reasoning behind lying to Saru about seeing a Kelpian. What's the harm in that? Saru knows his species is prey, and in a universe where Terrans are fighting anything that is alien, would it be a big shock to him to find out that he was a slave in this universe? What is she protecting him from? I don't get it. Speaking of don't getting, I really didn't understand Michael's whole reasoning about wanting to go down and talk to the Klingon leader. I know she tells Lorca she wants to find out how he united all the different alien races and brought them together. Well, duh, she's smart enough to realize that the reason they're all together is because they got a common foe, the Terrans. And what's happening in this Mirror Universe has absolutely no bearing on what's happening in our universe. For her to find out, well, how can a Klingon work with other people? He's a sentient being. He learns to adapt to the situation, just like any sentient being would. I mean, that's just common sense. The only way in this time period of our universe for the Klingons and humans to fight together was if they had a common foe to fight against. Now, I got a lot more I can say, but I'm just going to go into my turbo lift up and turbo lift down moments. Turbo lift up, it was nice to see an Andorian on the episode. Yeah, that's all I got. Okay, turbo lift down. No wonder the rebels are losing. They're worse shots than stormtroopers are. At least stormtroopers were trying to hit their target with a little half-inch diameter laser bolt. These rebels are shooting whatever that's creating huge explosions, and they can't even get within 30 feet of them. Ridiculous. And more so, once Michael and Ash surrender, the prisoners are taken in to what is arguably the most important rebel around, which we find out is Vok, which really wasn't a big surprise. They do not search the prisoners. The prisoners are not restrained. They're not even held or marched in. They're allowed to walk at their own pace with a couple of armed people a few steps ahead of them and a few behind, yes. But that's not how you march prisoners in to see the most important person around. Not to mention revealing their secret to them. Michael made the comment about the active camouflage. Oh, so that's how they've been hiding from us for the past 2 years. Rebels, you just gave away one of your biggest secrets. How stupid are you? And then when they finally get into the meeting chamber, there isn't a single armed guard watching the prisoner as they talk to Vok and what I presume is the leading council of the rebels. I specifically looked for this during my rewatch. There isn't a single armed guard around. Yes, the people sitting at the table have weapons, but with two Terrans in their midst, you'd think they'd have armed guards there. Now, it was fun to see Sarek show up and do his mind meld with Michael, but again, I don't understand how the glimpses that we saw him see, how that convinced him that she means them no harm. I don't know how you can put the two and two together. We would have been better off showing visions of her interacting and being friendly with different alien species, laughing and being comrades with them. That would have been more convincing to show Sarek that, yes, she is a good person and means them no harm. But seeing her and this other Sarek, which probably just confused him, should not have led to the conclusion that he came up with. That's enough about that storyline. Another Turbolift Down moment is I love the part about Saru being a slave, but since when do slaves just barge into their master's quarters without knocking? Isn't that an easy way to get a slave killed, especially in this world? I mean, yeah, he was there to save the day, but three times in this episode, he walked in unannounced. I don't know how the prior Michael Burnham put up with it. And the last thing I want to mention is, how did Discovery manage to transport Tyler back onto their ship without being detected? There's no way that they can be close enough to transport without the Sengjo knowing that they're there. And there was no indication that the Sengjo knew the Discovery was around. Anyways, there's a bunch of other stuff I can nitpick about this episode. This is probably my least favorite from the season so far. And what makes it even worse is it's coming after last week's episode, which I think was the best of the season. But hopefully things will pick up again next week. Anyways, thanks for listening through my rant. This is Mark from Ontario, Canada, out.
We will listen to you rant any time you want, Mark. Because your rants are gold.
I'm sorry you didn't like this episode. I really liked it. I don't know why. I really liked it. I mean, I liked it better than last week. And man, we just have polar opposite views. We have mirror universe views. Because I liked the opening monologue. I didn't think it was boring. But of course, I had the whole the wolf you feed sort of thing in the back of my mind while I was listening to it, because I thought this from the outset, though, that it would be a struggle for all of them. Tilly, anyone who's playing a part in this universe, I knew it. I mean, it's the wolf you feed. And if you start acting like that, eventually you start thinking like that. And, you know, actions lead to thoughts, lead to actions, actions lead to behaviors. Behavior leads to character. So,
yeah,
you make
friends with the wrong crowd, and that leads to one thing after another, and that leads to a whole mirror universe of baddies.
Yeah. Anyway. So,
yeah, it's worth one thing that Mark said. I don't have it in the notes here, but do you think that the mirror universe and the prime universe, or as you said, universe A versus universe B last week, do you think they were ever one universe and they diverged somehow? Or were they?
Well, if you ascribe to the multiverse theory, anytime you make a decision, that's a divergence into like all possible decisions that could be made. are possible universes, and that's how they diverge, which, I mean, talk about convoluted. Yeah. So it's possible, but it's possible too that there was only one divergence and all of the other decisions after that or what have you. I mean, of course, you're talking about an entire universe and all the people in it. I don't know. It's possible that it could be just one thing that's different, and that would be the Terran Empire instead of Starfleet, maybe. I don't know. I mean, I feel like anything is possible, so can't discount it. However, I do feel like it's more probable that they would be using the... oh, what was that thing called?
The Agonizer?
No. The... instead of Stamets being...
Oh, the Tardigrade.
Yeah, thanks. I feel like it's more likely that they would be using the Tardigrade in the Mirror Universe than Stamets. Yeah. Or the micelle stuff, because they probably wouldn't care about the life of the Tardigrade because they don't have the same values as Starfleet does. So that was one thing that I could kind of say, yeah, okay, amen.
Yeah, I'm hoping that we get some kind of explanation for that, because I mentioned that last week that it would have made more sense for them to, you know, like, not give two craps about the Tardigrade.
Right.
You know, and their solution wouldn't be to make, you know, Stamets become a Tardigrade.
Right.
It would be to find more Tardigrades.
Yeah. And I would also say that's not necessarily Mirror Universe Stamets. We don't know.
Well, that's true. And yeah, because there are many universes. But he did have a Terran uniform on. He had the whole sash and so it probably was. But but it doesn't necessarily need to be. I agree with you on that.
And it doesn't necessarily mean that the Mirror Universe Stamets has the micelles injected into him. It also doesn't mean that maybe they've been experimenting longer on the Tardigrade and they came to a conclusion that it could pay off to inject a human with micelles, and Stamets either volunteered or was forcibly volunteered or wanted to or whatever. So, I mean, I think that one little scene doesn't necessarily lock down anything.
Yeah. Well,
although it was interesting.
Yeah. I'll just sum it up and just say that I think the Mirror Universe doesn't, you know, really stand up to any deep scrutiny. I think, you know, I think it's just a fun place. And, you know, if you start to try to dig in to, you know, try to figure out why it's there. And, you know, like I mentioned last week, that it seems like a universe, the way that, you know, how they kill everybody and everybody advances through death. It doesn't seem sustainable. And, you know, we know from Deep Space Nine, eventually the Empire does fall. So, you know, but still I think it's best not to dwell upon those things. Just enjoy it.
Don't put it under a microscope.
Yes, exactly. I will say that I liked the mind meld between Sarek and Burnham a heck of a lot more than you did, Mark. Although the court-martial would have kind of conflicted with that, I think, a little bit. So that seemed a little strange to be in there. But like, if Sarek didn't know about Mirror Universe, and there's no reason why he would have known about it, like the Terrans know about it existing because, you know, they have Defiant, but I don't know. He also knows about Defiant, I guess, but still.
Well, it seems to me that he didn't just, I mean, I think he saw probably her whole life. I mean, it's a right. mind meld.
Right.
And when he's seeing her whole life, honestly, we're only going to see the scenes that they've shot for the show.
Yeah.
because those are the easiest to throw in there. They're not going to create new scenes, probably, I would say, just for the mind meld, etc. So to me, I think that what threw him off the most was the fact that he raised her.
Yeah.
But he's like, I didn't raise her.
Yeah.
But she has memories of me raising her. So.
And there's a big flashback in there that has Burnham talking to Amanda, which we know that he married Amanda because in this universe, he has Spock, right? So he must have seen that too, going, maybe we'll see Sarek again, you know, before the end of the season, and, you know, some of that could kind of come out. I don't know, but.
Yeah. Well, just because they have Spock doesn't necessarily mean that they were married. Just throw that out there.
Love child.
I'm just saying.
Well, then again, you know, Vulcans saying love child, that might be a little bit of a stretch.
Well, I mean, who knows what happened, honestly. Again, these are things that we can only speculate on. We cannot draw exact conclusions, or we don't know precisely. We just can make inferences at this point in time. I mean, honestly, it could be anything. Maybe she crash landed on a planet or something. And I mean, who knows? But at this point in time, we don't even know for sure that they're married in this universe. We just know that Spock exists. So
brown chicka brown cow. Well, we don't even know brown chicka brown cow, because it could be, you know, through medical experiments or something.
It could be anything, but
yes,
some things are probably more likely than others, but nevertheless,
I did think that the whole reason that Burnham goes down there was a bit weak, you know, like, and that's kind of, that kind of comes out when she asks Vok, and Vok, you know, just kind of like, well, you know, they're my comrades. And there really wasn't anything deeper than, like, it was almost like she was expecting something to, you know, come from the Klingon psyche out of that. And really it was just, you know, teamwork, common foe, that whole kind of thing, and not really much beyond that. So, you know, that was kind of one of the things that I thought made it a little bit weak. And I also thought it was weak that they had their base kind of in the middle of a quarry or whatever, you know, whatever that place was. Because it's like, wouldn't they have buildings? Why'd they have to have everything in tents? You know,
makes for a fast getaway, I guess. I did think it was a little strange that I was like, what, no bags over the head or something? I mean,
yeah. Yeah. Oh, come on in, you know?
Yeah. Like Mark said, it was kind of more like a, like an escort rather than, haha, we captured you.
Yeah. To that, you know, he mentions about the poor shots. And I think we both agree that it seemed like they weren't trying to hit them. It was warning shots.
Yeah, it wasn't really a shoot to kill,
yeah,
sort of thing, which seems a little odd. I mean, I guess they were surrendering, so I don't know.
Yeah. Saru. So a couple thoughts of that. We had wondered about, I think you mentioned this on the round table, that you don't ever want to meet those predators.
Yeah.
And I guess he kind of shows that from this episode, the way he threw Tyler.
Yeah, he did.
Yeah. So, it makes you wonder about those predators. And I wonder, you know, where are those predators in this universe?
Yeah.
I'm thinking that, well, okay, they're doing a thing that they do on The Walking Dead a lot that drives me crazy. But it seems more fitting here, where they're not telling the truth or they're omitting certain facts between each other. You see that here, like Saru doesn't tell Burnham about Colbert, and Burnham doesn't tell Saru that, yeah, there's another Saru here, but he's not a Saru. He's a no-name Saru, and he's a slave.
Oh, okay.
You know.
What are you talking about?
Yeah. So it makes me wonder if some of that has to do with, like, what Burnham said at the beginning, how this universe, you know, it gets easier and easier, because that kind of seems something that they would do in the mirror universe, like, you know, like omissions and things like that versus Starfleet, which would be more of a, you know, open policy, I guess. But I'm wondering if telling Saru was indeed, or should I say not telling Saru was indeed the correct decision, because I think if he knew that Saru was a slave and had no name, might kind of work against him and work against his confidence level, because, you know, we need to have Saru operating, you know, with full confidence, and he's had problems with that a little bit.
Yeah, she probably is aware of his issues, confidence issues,
yeah,
as far as his leadership goes. So
yeah,
I think there's nothing wrong with her not saying. Like, that's, I probably wouldn't tell me, yeah, you're a slave over here either. I mean, if one of my friends said, hey, did you find me? And the other me was a something that I would find horrible, then I can see not saying, you know, I don't know. I get it. I get why they're both withholding, I guess. Like you said, it makes more sense here because they're both in very tenuous positions. They don't want the other to be distracted. I feel like also with Saru withholding the Colbert info is more along the lines of maybe they kind of have suspicions about Tyler, and that would definitely undermine her confidence, I think. But then on the other hand, maybe forewarned is forearmed. I don't know.
Well, it seemed at the time they still thought that Stamets did it.
Maybe. I don't know. You know, I can't remember. I only saw
it once. You remember, yeah, you remember Tilly said, you know, something like that this wasn't Stamets, this was, you know, a product of an addled mind.
Yeah, that's true. I remember
that. You know, so, but I think that obviously that's one thing I don't have written down, but I guess there was some transmission between the two ships, you know, that went in between them taking him and beaming him out to space. So there must have been something there, or maybe she did it as she beamed him. I don't know. But somehow they knew to find him there. And where was Discovery hiding? They couldn't have done a jump because, you know, the spore drive is down with no Stamets. So
I'm not sure that she was necessarily concerned whether or not he got there alive.
I guess, because yeah.
If they beamed him on board, they would still have that data cube or whatever. So he doesn't necessarily need to be alive to accomplish that.
That's true. Yeah, I guess that's true.
I mean, they probably wanted him alive. She probably was like, I don't care.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I don't know where they were. I don't know that it necessarily matters either, because she could have easily notified them by when she said whatever she said, hang on, I want to do it or whatever, about she wants to be the one to, she punched something in right before she energized. So she could have very well sent a little heads up.
And she obviously did a little bit of a, you know, David Copperfield, David Blaine magic trick there and planted the the disc on him when she punched him.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Which I thought personally was quite clever. I mean,
I sure was did.
Like, okay, that's cool.
I did not see that coming, actually. So
I didn't either. I thought, oh, that is a great way to get the information off of the Shenzhou, however you say that word. Shenzhou. I also wanted to point out that as far as the slave bursting in on her, that's what servants do. They walk in because, and especially slave servants, because that's they're doing what they're supposed to do in that kind of a society. The help isn't really seen or noticed. They're kind of like furniture. So he had probably done that a million times, and this time was no different because that's what they do. They come in at the pre-specified time, and that's when they're there. And probably she, Mirror Burnham, never thought of him as any kind of a threat. Probably thought he's so completely cowed that she doesn't have to worry about him. She probably spilled all kinds of secrets in front of him before this Burnham. Of course, this Burnham is on her guard because she doesn't really know how to act in front of a slave servant. As in, I mean, I wouldn't know how to act in front of them because I've never had a slave or a servant before.
Yeah, but she made a good observation on that they do literally come and go, as because they're servants. So, you know, yeah.
That's what I mean. If you've ever seen Downton Abbey.
Well, I haven't seen that, but I have seen, other.
If you've ever seen Game of Thrones,
that's what I'm thinking of is Game of Thrones.
Yeah, they go around, they do what they do, and they're not viewed as anything, certainly not any kind of threat or any kind of anything to ever be, I guess, malicious to the people that they are, like the people that they're serving don't view the servants as malicious, I guess, is what I'm trying to say. Like, they just, because that's the way of life. That's how they think. So I would say that's probably why he bursts in so many times, because it wasn't really bursting in. It was just going in and doing his job.
And thank goodness that he came in when he did.
No kidding. Although I did have a momentary thought of, this doesn't really seem like, I mean, if they're in a kill or be killed kind of society, wouldn't they now view her as weak if she can't take him out? I don't know. But maybe not. Because they did execute him in short order, so.
Yeah.
I kind of also was thinking, man, is she going to somehow try and save him? I hope not. And she didn't.
Yeah.
Because that would completely blow her cover. So, anyway.
Yeah.
That's all I had to say.
I'll say this now, just because it's popped in my head, and I probably won't think of it later. And I didn't mention it in the yeses, but Emperor Georgiou.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I really want to see where that's going, and I guess I'll talk more about that, but I wonder if she got tipped off from Detmer because she didn't, immediately put to waste the rebels. So it's just funny how, the Emperor just comes in there. I have to think somebody tipped her off. So, do you have anything else to say from Mark's feedback, or should we move on?
I think that's it.
All right. So, Fred, he gave us written feedback with pictures. So, the pictures I'm going to try to post in the blog post on this episode, so that when you look it up in the notes of whatever podcast app you look at, you'll see them. Never done that before, so it may not work. But if you go to the blog post on our webpage, you'll see them there. But I will also post the pictures in the Facebook group. He says, "Hello, Brian and Ruthie. This time I send you a written feedback instead of an audio feedback, mainly because I want to show you some stuff which would be difficult when spoken." Which is kind of funny because we have to speak it. But he says, "The theme of my feedback is light and dark. First off, my last week's rating of episode 10 was a little awkward, I have to admit. I said 7.5 pretty assy hand jewels, which should have been 7.5 pretty badass hand jewels. Foreign languages remain difficult sometimes, especially if you try to imitate the slang spoken or written by others. And like we said, you're better than us because we are, well, I have a little bit of French, but not a lot. But
I have a lot of French and I still couldn't do it.
So,
I mean, it was my major in college for a long time.
Oh, I didn't know that.
So, yep. That's, I went to France for 10 months.
That I knew, but.
Yep. Spoke it, lived it, still couldn't do it.
Which is funny. I'm French Canadian, and you probably know French better than I do.
No, it has been a while since I've spoken it. So
He continues. He says, I also said that my score was would probably be higher if I had had the chance to watch it a second time, and it did. I now give it a 9 hold your horses out of 10. 10 out of 10, as Mark did, was just a little bit too much for me, but I will give this episode, episode 11, a 10 out of 10 for its lighting. He says the lighting is so, so beautifully done and is surely a big
yes.
However, this is a little bit in contrast to what my wife said. And I guess she said, why don't they call it Dark Trek instead of Star Trek? So dark, everything, so sinister, so unlike previous Star Trek. It doesn't feel like Star Trek. I love the bathtub scene, so beautifully lit. I only wondered if this bath is always in her room, which is huge, by the way. Yeah, I know. I noticed that her room was really big. I never saw a Star Trek captain have such a large room. And he gives a picture of Saru giving Burnham a bath from a wide shot. The answer is no, because when Mira Saru is bringing food and Michael chases Ash away, the bath is gone. So, yeah, I guess it. I wonder if they beam it away or something.
I mean, if you could, you should, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, if I could move my furniture around, be like, I don't want this to be here.
Yeah.
It'd be great.
Hollow tub. Anyway, two other beautiful shots were of the bridge of the Shenzhou when Burnham and her number one, Kayla Detmer, Coral, and he says, do not anticipate me, number one. Captain, we have orders. No, I have my orders. You've all grown soft in my absence. One.
Yes.
Is Burnham's quote. We all start out with the same drives, the same needs. Maybe none of us, no matter what world we're from, really know what darkness is waiting inside. Thank you for this. You remind me of everything good, of what I want my world to look like. And I guess she's talking to Tyler when she says that. One beautiful lit scene is when they walk over the planet Harlac towards the cloaked camp of the Fire Wolf. And he has a picture of that. And yeah, I thought that was kind of a cool shot. The best quote of this episode is by Tilly. Saru says, well, I'm impressed. Tilly, enough that you'll recommend me for the command training program? Well, obviously she got a taste for it, he says. And I'll say this, like, I wonder if this is going to give her the confidence that she lacked, you know, because she was always kind of, like we said, I think on the, I don't know if it was last week or was the round table. I said, she's kind of like the quintessential millennial. This will teach her assertiveness because, you know, literally she has to be assertive to play Captain Killy.
Mm-hmm.
So, another.
Yes.
Was seeing Sarek back and how he was played by James Frayne. Yeah, I thought he was good in this. I mean, he's always good. But and then he says, "What are my
no?
What are his no's? One, how the heck did Saru know how and when to beam Ash/Valk on board the Discovery? Two, is the Discovery near enough to do this at all? If I missed it, it's still a no for me, because it then was so well hidden that it still counts as a no. Number three, it's quite unlikely that Valk trusts the butcher of the binary stars that executed thousands of his kind, and it gets even more unlikely after Ash has attacked them." Yeah, I would agree with that. And he ends this with greets Fred with a picture of Fred. Well, thank you, Fred. And we appreciate all the work that you did to deliver this feedback together, because it comes with audio visuals. Well, I should say visuals, not audio visuals. But
yeah. Yep.
Yeah. All right. Anything additional based on what he talked about?
I don't think so. I think we kind of already covered is the Discovery near enough to do this? Maybe it doesn't have to be. I feel like Michael kind of maybe didn't care if he was alive when he got beamed on board. I don't know. But yeah, that's pretty much it.
Yeah. All right. Next is Stefan.
Okay. So he says, "So Michael connecting with this universe slave Saru saved her life when remote control Ash Tyler's inner person popped out to make a physical Vulcan hello in Klingon style. Strike first, ask questions later." So last episode, I thought Ash was Volk, but I guess it was shown so obvious in last episode to trick the Watcher. Now I have no clue where Volk is in the other universe, but he showed up in this universe. It was an okay episode, but it felt like a step-by-step episode, so it felt a bit too quick. Last week's reveal was fantastic, and I enjoyed it. Now looking into this harsh and brutal universe ruled by the Terran Empire makes me think that humans here are more Klingon than Klingons themselves. A curiosity is that I watched The Commuter today at the cinema. Shahzad Latif, who plays Ash, has a very small part in that movie. When I saw him, I thought, stay away from him. And I pictured that robot in Lost in Space that shouts, danger, danger. That was another universe and another role, but it still made me smile. Danger, Will Robinson.
Okay, so I'm a little confused by something he says in here. He says he has no clue where Valk is in the other universe, but he showed up in this universe. So are you thinking that Tyler isn't Valk? Because I think it pretty conclusively is made clear that he is Valk. Now, whether or not there's another Ash, you know, living or deceased, we don't know, but because that's possible. We don't know the whole thing about Ash. It could have been he could have been a prisoner that they killed and they took his identity, or he could have been someone that didn't actually exist. Who knows? But like we said last week,
he definitely existed.
Maybe it was that guy that was killed in the in the prison cell. Maybe he was the actual Ash.
Maybe.
It's a possibility. But so I don't know if there was something about the episode that confused you in that, but it's pretty clear. I mean, the one thing that sold it for me, and it was something that I didn't pick up on first watch, but when he was saying all the things that he said about like Valk in that scene with Burnham, and he convinced Burnham when he said something about his eyes getting, you know, poked or gouged or whatever, and she said that, or he said that that she fought like a coward or something, and mm-hmm. and apparently that was not testified. So that was
She said, "I never told anyone that."
Yeah. So, you know, clearly
I never testified to that or whatever.
Yeah. So clearly that was something that only Vok would have known, right? So that tells me that Tyler is Vok. So
Yeah, I think it was hinted at last week and confirmed this week. That's kind of what I thought.
Yeah.
So I'm also not sure where the confusion is, I guess. But let us know.
Yeah.
Maybe we can help clarify it further.
Or maybe we already have.
or whatever.
And I talked about this a little bit earlier, but I think what I was expecting was, you know, some kind of reveal, like Laurel telling, you know, them on Discovery that Tyler is Vok or something.
Wahaha, Tyler is Vok.
Yeah. and that's not what we got. And that's why I thought that the actual reveal was a lot more effective than, you know, what I was expecting. I don't know why. I didn't think we would see Vok in this episode until they brought up Firewolf. And then I thought, well, who's Firewolf? And then I thought of two people it could have been. One it ended up being. The other one would have been T'Kuvma.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but it makes a heck of a lot more sense than it ended up being Vok. So anyway, let us know if you, Stefan, or anybody else has any more questions. We'll try to answer them. Next is Rick, and I want to talk about something he says in this feedback. He says, glad to have the extra day. We should mention we're recording Tuesday night instead of Monday night.
It was my brother's birthday yesterday.
Yeah, happy birthday.
He turned 30. My baby brother turned 30.
Oh, jeez.
I know.
I can barely remember 30.
I remember being irritated that I spent my birthday around a bunch of 20-something whippersnappers when I turned 30. It's like, you guys have no idea. You just wait. Your turn is coming.
Winter's coming.
No, your turn is
coming. Oh, your turn is coming. Well,
as in, they'll be 30 soon enough, but they have no idea. Anyway, never mind.
I get it. I remember when I turned 30, I thought I was so old. I couldn't. It was like, oh, I'm getting old. And it's like, I would give anything to be 30 again. Anyway, he says, I enjoyed this week's episode. Tyler / Vok finally realizing his true nature and confirming what fans have suspected for months is satisfying. Seeing Tyler / Vok versus Mirror Vok was awesome. I agree. I must say, though, the past few episodes, I have had to come to terms with the fact that Star Trek Discovery is not a show I can share with my kids. And when I hear that, I must play. He continues, he says, this is tough to reconcile, as one of my earliest TV memories is watching Star Trek reruns on Saturday nights on UHF channels. That sounds very similar to my past. I remember Channel 50, WKBD, used to have, I think 6 o'clock at night would have Star Trek on, something like that. And I'd watch it every Saturday night. I get the desire to evolve with the times, but simply toning down some of the Tyler / Vok flashbacks and we'd have a show that is still edgy but watchable for my 10-year-old. I am reminded of an episode from the first season of TNG, Conspiracy. I remember that one vividly.
Mm-hmm.
That, I think, was the first episode of TNG that really compelled me. I remember watching that one many, many times after season one was up. In the episode, alien parasites had taken over a large portion of Starfleet Command. The episode was dark and intense. It was also open-ended. The reception to the episode was mixed, and it was decided that there would be no follow-up. The storyline was never revisited. There were dark stories later, a lot of the Borg, but evil was always defeated, and the show found its way back to hope and exploration. Discovery is more of a challenge. The format does not lend itself to the episodic happy ending. As much as I enjoy it, I wish I could share it with my kids. I suppose I have 28 seasons and a dozen movies, but in an era where we share more superhero shows and movies than I can keep track of, something feels off about not being able to watch Star Trek with them. That's kind of sad, I think. Now, I don't have kids. Neither of us do. So
yeah, I don't have kids either.
Yeah. So, you know, it's a little hard to relate to that, but I think it's kind of sad in a way. And I think it's probably accurate. And the only thing I can say to you is share it when you think they're old enough, you know?
Yep.
Or, you know, watch it first and, you know, the parts that, you know, are too mature, just kind of, you know, hand wave.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, if you think the Tangled Bodies of Context is for Kings, episode 3, if they're, you know, too disturbing for you, I would just, you know, keep them away. Some of the Klingon flashback, you know, again, doesn't need to be shown. Maybe, you know, CBS All Access will have a version that is more friendly. I don't know. I don't think they do, but that might be something they would do, you know, with time. I don't know. But yeah, I do agree. You know, it was always, that's, you know, my first memories of Star Trek, you know, watching it with my dad. And, you know, it was always really my first real love. You know, I guess that, you know, watching reruns of Star Trek, $6 Million Man and Bionic Woman and probably Wonder Woman were the first shows that I remember that I really got into. And then, you know, a couple years later, like Battlestar Galactica, that was awesome. The original one I'm talking about. But, yep. Anyway, do you have anything you want to say about Rick's feedback?
I mean, I get where you're coming from, but you're right. There are a crap ton of other episodes of Star Trek that you can watch. So just show them that again. It'll be fine.
Yeah. I'll say this. You know, I mentioned I've been watching Deep Space Nine. I got to say, the first couple seasons of Deep Space Nine were a lot better than I remember them being.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I was thinking not as good.
Well, there are a few stinkers in there, but even those stinkers weren't as bad as some of those first season episodes from Next Generation.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
But I still remember when I rewatched Deep Space Nine a little while ago thinking, I remember this being so much better. It's like, well, it gets better, way better.
Yeah.
Especially that first episode, I was like, what is happening here? I mean, of course, I knew everything that they were setting up in that first episode, but I prefer my Sisko to be bald with a goatee. Thank you.
Yep. Yeah. And that's when the show got good, for sure. It got really good.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, some of my most favorite episodes are in Deep Space Nine, like when they did the Trouble with Tribbles.
Yeah.
Revamp. Oh, love that one. So good.
Yeah. Yeah. It had been a while since I watched Deep Space Nine. So I was, when I started thinking about it, I was like, yeah, you know, sitting here, I can't, I'm too sick to work. So I'll watch Deep Space Nine and I'm going to keep watching it.
Mm-hmm.
Probably won't take me long to watch 170 plus episodes, but, you know,
yeah, they all have kind of rocky starts. Voyager had sort of a rocky start, but
yeah,
boy, they kicked into gear with Species 8472. It was awesome.
Yep.
Kicking the crap out of the Borg. I was like, ugh. And plus 7 of 9, aside from the aesthetic appeal, she was just cool.
She was. Yeah, I've heard that apparently they did not get along. Kate Mulgrew and Jeri Ryan. There was a lot of tension on the set.
Well, that's unfortunate.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess and don't mean to speak negative of her, but I guess Kate wasn't too enthused about sharing the spotlight. So they say. All right, we got one more bit of feedback. That's from Martin.
Okay, Martin says, weakest episode so far. Easily predictable twists, illogical actions by the cast, i.e. Tyler attacking Volk and none of the other rebels reacting other than pointing weapons. Stamets being treated in engineering with no medical people around. Discovery being close enough to the Shenzhou to find and transport Tyler, but apparently undetected and unmentioned by either the Shenzhou or the Emperor, etc. I found the inconsistencies distracting and annoying.
Well, that's true. The Imperial flagship wouldn't have been too far away either. Hadn't thought of that, but...
Yeah, but how close do you really have to be to beam somebody? I don't know. I found nothing wrong with it. In fact, I did not think it was the weakest episode so far. I really liked it. Yeah. So, I don't know.
I definitely...
You guys are all crazy. Just kidding.
I definitely didn't think it was the weakest episode, but it wasn't the best either. So, to me. But it was good, but there were a few things that, you know... all right. So now we're up to our own points. So, one thing I thought of was Minority Report. And that was, that those people were spaced for malicious thoughts about the Emperor. So it wasn't that they did anything. It's that they thought about it. And it's like, okay, how did they have some kind of mental probe that came up, or did they say something and whatever they said that caused them to be spaced? I don't know, yeah. But
I don't know.
Yeah. I wondered if the slave Saru actually has a name and just doesn't admit to it.
I think it's probably Saru.
Yeah.
Which is why when she said, I'm just going to call you Saru, he was like, what? Because that's probably his name.
Yeah. One thing I noticed, and there hasn't been a lot of, I haven't heard people complain about it too much, but then again, these two are not as well known or, you know, as much lore in Star Trek, but it's not just the Klingons that have changed. The Tellarites and Dorians look different too. Did you notice that?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. 'Cause the Tellarites, they have tusks now, which is different. And I don't know, they always kind of looked, I don't know, kind of dogish, I guess. It's kind of hard to explain, but I thought they looked quite a bit different. I know they were updated a little bit in Enterprise, but I can't think like right off the top of my head what they look like. I'd have to go and look at some pictures from then, but... Yeah, they definitely look different than I remember them. But Andorians were a little less noticeable. But like if you compare, I saw a picture comparing the Andorian that we saw in this episode to Shran, and they're even bluer than we saw. And they have like some kind of thing that replaces an eyebrow. It's almost like a pointy
ridge
thing. Yeah, a ridge or something, and I wonder if that has to do with like some kind of prosthesis electronics to control how the antenna move. I don't know, but I didn't really have a problem with it. They looked different, but it wasn't
as glaring.
Yeah. And in a lot of ways, I think it was more effective, like better, because the one thing that I have noticed in the past, especially with the Andorians, is you could occasionally see pink, like just in their eyes or ears, or, you know, something would give away that it's just a human with normal skin underneath. And this Andorian looked blue all the way,
mm-hmm.
you know, and it was a much darker blue, like a really almost like a fluorescent blue. So I thought that was cool. So like I think I said before, I'm wondering if we're going to find out next week that Georgiou in this universe raised Burnham and not Sarek. Because clearly Sarek didn't recognize her, I think. He seemed really kind of taken aback. Here's what I wonder. I wonder in the end, you know, the story starts with the death of Georgiou and, you know, how many people have blamed Burnham for it. And I'm wondering if the season will end with Georgiou either dying at the hands of Burnham in this universe, kind of like a bookend, or she will be saved by Burnham. Because either way, it's kind of a perfect circle. What do you think about that?
Well, what do you mean?
Well, it's just, you know, the story starts with Georgiou dying and, you know, them being close and people blaming her for her death. And it seems like this arc would end with a bookend to that. So either Georgiou dies again at her hands intentionally, or Georgiou saved by Burnham in this universe. Because just from
saved in what way?
She saves her life somehow. There's a lot of people, and Mark brought this theory up that he thought last week that Lorca is from the mirror universe. And, mm-hmm. you know, maybe Lorca's going to try to kill the Emperor if he is. And, like, I still don't know what to think of what Lorca's down for. I'm hoping maybe we'll finally get to know this episode coming. Because, I don't know, he could be from, you know, our universe A, our prime universe. He could be from the mirror universe. He could be from a different universe. I mean, I still don't know where he's going. And I love that I don't, because it's just so complex. And I just love that it is. And I can't wait to find out, but I just wonder. I think, one more final thing. It was one thing I had noticed last week I didn't mention, and I noticed it again. And that was, and I think you mentioned this, but I wasn't, when I brought up the Defiant last week, I was thinking inside that it looked different, but we already know that it looks different, because if you look at the diagram that we saw on screen, that Defiant looks different. Like it had some kind of like edges around the saucer section, and the struts that, you know, go from the secondary hull, I guess.
The not saucer section.
I think they usually call that the secondary hull. Anyway, the nacelles.
It's the battle bridge. I don't know.
Well, anyway, the connection between the nacelles and that secondary hull doesn't look anything like what we saw in the original series. Like in the original series, they're just, you know, like at an angle going straight. And in that diagram, there's actually a thing in the middle of each, you know, strut, and it angles out. So like if we ever do see the Defiant, I think we're going to see a Defiant that does not look like the original series. But like you said last week, it's totally explainable because it's been in this mirror universe for, you know, 100 years. So they would have been, you know, reverse engineering and probably retrofitting stuff onto it and improving it and doing whatever else to it in that time frame. So, and for that matter, is it still operational? I mean, 100-year-old Starship, I don't know if that would still be running. So we may never see it, but
who knows?
Yeah. I think that this episode gives me a good textbook example of execution of the story is often more important than the story itself. You know, because like the reveal of Tyler being Vok, I think was executed really well, a lot better than it could have been. You know, what we could have gotten was just a reveal from Laurel going, Tyler is Vok. You know, the fact that we knew that Tyler was Vok, it could have been told in a really straightforward way that would have been kind of boring. But instead, they did it in a way, they executed that, you know, grand larger story in a much more interesting way. The reveal was more interesting than I thought it was going to be. Do you have anything else you want to bring up?
I guess I just disagree with everybody almost. I feel like this episode was really good. It might have been telegraphed a little bit, but I didn't really mind it because I thought the way that the story unfolded was really interesting. And I guess I was stuck on this whole, I mean, I've been on the same note since we've started the Mirror Universe episodes, because I keep thinking, how long is it going to be until they either crack under the pressure or get too used to acting this way? I mean, same with any undercover asset or what have you, that eventually it's going to wear on you. And to me, if you think about it in terms of the wolf you feed, then I thought it was really great because they are all by necessity having to feed the wolf that they don't want to feed. And it's just having an adverse effect on them. I don't know. And I thought it was great the way that Burnham was after the whole Ash Tyler thing. She was like, bring the prisoner to my cell. I need to assuage my something or whatever she said. I was like, oh, it's so cool. Because she's finding ways to communicate with him without it being obvious, you know, without running down there to talk to him in his cell every whatever. So I thought, I don't know. And it's interesting the way that he was, it seemed like he kind of wanted her to stay there longer because she's like, all right, cool, we're done.
Yeah.
And he's kind of like, oh no, we can't be done yet. Even though, I mean, he's getting tortured.
I know.
It can't be pleasant for him. So I'm like, why is he willing to sacrifice that much? But I loved the Georgiou reveal as emperor. I knew she was going to be the emperor. I just kept thinking to myself, Michelle Yeoh can't have just been in two episodes.
Right.
Or one episode or whatever. She has to be the emperor. And she was. So I was super excited about that. And I don't know. Maybe she will end up having raised Michael Burnham. And I think it's highly plausible that that's the fact or the case. Otherwise, who raised her? What happened to her? Anyway.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well, I did enjoy this episode. Like, you know, you weren't alone. And I will say, you know, listening to a few other fellow Star Trek Discovery podcasts, it seems like this episode was kind of polarizing. Like you either really loved it or you didn't like it too much. So, you know, so I heard from a few that didn't like it, but then I heard from others that really did. So, you know, I thought it was, you know, good enough for a 9. Of course, you know, I think everything's a 9.
Yes, you do.
Yeah. I well, it's one of those things, you know, I something's got to be really good for me to want to podcast about it. And if it's not, you know, at least a 7, I'm going to get bored, you know,
mm-hmm.
That's the way I am. So, all right. That
I'm excited that Georgiou is the emperor. That's all I have to say.
Yeah, I think this next episode's going to be really good.
I think she's going to have to kill her for real. That's what I think.
Yeah.
I think she's going to have to kill Georgiou for real. Whereas last time she couldn't save her from being killed. This time I think she's going to have to kill her for real. It's going to mess with her head.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I really hope that we finally get some kind of idea of Lorca and, you know, where he's at. Is he a good guy? Is he a bad guy? Is he a gray guy? You know, which universe is he from and what's he really after? You know, I really want to know that. I'm also curious if what's her face? Cornwell is in this universe too. I mean, maybe she works with the emperor. Maybe she's like the chief of staff or something. So
who knows?
I didn't see any 47s again, so we can't really go into that. To submit your feedback, there are many ways, but the way for audio is usually through the feedback form, which is at goldenspiralmedia.com/feedback. You can submit audio there. There's a SpeakPipe widget you can use there. And there's 304-837-2278. There is our Gmail, which is StarTrekGSM@gmail.com. Most of our feedback, though, comes through our Facebook group, which is at facebook.com/groups/StarTrekDiscoveryPodcast. And we got some feedback this week through our Twitter, which is also StarTrekGSM. Our normal deadline was extended this week, but our normal deadline for submitting feedback is Monday at 6 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Central. Many ways to support the podcast, help us get through the vast wilderness, which is the number of Star Trek Discovery podcasts that are out there. Help us rise to the top. And you can do that by when you see that we've had an episode come out, share it, post about it, like our tweets, all of that kind of stuff. If you have a friend that's watching the show, tell them to check us out. Subscribe to us in your podcast client of choice. That will help you get the episode right away. If you use Apple Podcasts, you can go to goldenspiralmedia.com/apple, which will take you to the Golden Spiral Media page there, and that will show you all of the many podcasts in the network. There are several that are going right now, including the new one for Electric Dreams, which just came out on Amazon this past week. We have a whole thing for that. If you use Apple Podcasts, you can help us out by giving us a rating and especially a review. We don't have any new ones this week, but if you've given us a review in the past, thank you so much. Other ways to help support the podcast network can be found at goldenspiralmedia.com/support. The next episode is episode 12, which is Vaulting Ambition. I don't know who wrote it or directed it, but one of the guests on After Trek next week is Jonathan Frakes. So I don't know if that means that he's directed it.
Probably.
Or what, but I think it's Anthony Rapp. I want to say Jason Isaacs and Jonathan Frakes for After Trek. So it's possible. All right. But until next time, I'm Brian.
And I'm Ruthie.
Peace and long life.
Live long and prosper.